to find a seat. What I'm going to do this evening, we've had three watershed people who have traveled in this afternoon, and I'm going to call them up before we get our full committee here. So I'd like to call the subcommittee of the Joint Salmon Stream Species and Stream to order, and ask Jan Perth, is that right? And John Runyon and Tom Macy. Could all three of you folks come up? And what I'd ask you to do is to just be very brief in your comments this evening, because we are going into a work session, and we need to move forward as soon as possible. So. Sure. Whoever wants to start first, fine.
You want to go, John?
Sure. For the record, I am John Runyon. I am coordinator for the McKenzie Watershed Council. And in addition, I serve on the board for the Willamette Restoration Initiative. So I'm used to dealing with, or not used to, learning to deal with various levels of complexity with these issues. So I'll be very brief with my testimony, and certainly will answer any questions that you may have. In my opinion, to create a long-term and effective approach to fish recovery and water quality improvement, we need to have solid institutional capacity at both the local and state levels. To have a sustainable and legally defensible approach for watershed recovery requires a statewide strategy and implementation mechanism that assists local efforts by framing issues, identifying problems, and solutions at various scales, local, regional, and at basin scales. In addition, we need to provide tools for effective problem solving. And in my opinion, GWEB's new watershed assessment manual is an example of a tool that can be applied at the watershed level for identifying problems and approaches for restoration. In addition, developing a sustainable, legally defensible approach to watershed restoration means increasing the capacity of local delivery mechanisms. And by local delivery mechanisms, I mean primarily watershed councils and SWCDs, but I also include counties and other local jurisdictions in that definition. The local watershed level is obviously where fish restoration and species recovery will be implemented. To be successful, watershed councils must have sufficient resources. Adequate resources for administering the watershed process and adequate resources for implementing specific projects. By administration, I mean all of those things that need to happen if we are going to implement locally supported and scientifically sound projects. To me, administration means coordination, watershed assessment, action plan development, monitoring, and watershed-wide public outreach. This is an important point when you deliberate on what capital expenditures mean. All of those functions need to be supported in addition to, you know, on-the-ground projects to restore fish and wildlife habitat. Adequate funding for coordination, assessment, action plan development, monitoring, and education are essential for the long-term success of projects. Watershed councils are spending a huge amount of staff time devoted to overhead activities, primarily writing and administering grants. These activities divert energy away from accomplishing real watershed restoration work. Therefore, I support providing block grants to watershed councils for all activities, administration and projects, if, and this is the big if watershed councils have completed assessments and prioritized action plans. These components, that is, assessments and prioritized action plans, will provide a scientifically based framework, in my opinion, that will guide long-term investment in the watershed. My final point concerns SWCDs and watershed councils. I know there's been a lot of deliberation here about that relationship. In my opinion, SWCDs and watershed councils can work in partnership, and they're both essential for the successful implementation of watershed recovery. However, I believe that we need to allow the working relationship to evolve at the local level and not impose an artificial allocation of responsibilities. To impose an equal status upon the current process is misguided. Do provide resources to both, but let the local approach to the organizational relationship be locally driven. In the McKinsey, for example, the Watershed Council works in partnership with our local SWCE, each playing off their individual strengths. The staff of the East Lane Soil and Water Conservation District, because they have the relationships and the technical knowledge, work directly with landowners, particularly the agricultural community. The McKinsey Watershed Council takes the lead with the overall watershed strategy. This arrangement is logical, since the council represents a broader group of stakeholders, including the cities of Eugene and Springfield, the forest products industry, residents, Eugene Water and Electric Board, and others. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. And what I'd like to do is have all of you testify, and then we'll open it up for a few questions. So, Jan, would you like to proceed?
I'm Jan Pertu. I'm the coordinator for the Applegate River Watershed Council. I primarily came up here today to understand better how this process is moving forward and to understand how we can continue to try to participate in it. The main thing I wanted to say is that the Oregon Plan is a great concept. It seems to me like it's the only way we're really going to make the massive improvements in our natural resources that we need to accomplish. And watershed councils are a very important part of that. But as described in the Oregon Plan, the roles that agencies and other organizations play are also very important. The Watershed Council approach takes time to develop, and we need to appreciate that. People need to understand the scientific complexities, the land use complexities, the personal complexities, and the roles that all of these partners can play. The GWEB seminars that are held from time to time may help to accelerate this process and allow councils to achieve faster progress. Also, possibly mentoring by some of the older councils could be helpful. The key to the Watershed Council approach is that people really care about their land and their communities, and they want a say in the decisions that are going to be made. And Watershed Councils allow them to have that opportunity and that input. Watershed Councils are not exclusive clubs. All of our projects include some combination of interest groups, SWCDs, state and federal partners in various combinations depending on what the projects are. I feel like the Dash 5 amendment creates structures that are bound to create dissension between the parties rather than foster these partnerships, and I'm very concerned about that. The Dash 6 proposal seems to best reflect to me what the ideals of the Oregon Plan and the Watershed Council approach are all about. The definitions that are stated in the Dash 7 amendment, I think, sound pretty good as far as our council is concerned. And I'm just looking forward to hearing the conversation this afternoon, and we'll submit some written comments when I get back.
Okay, thank you. Tom?
Yes, my name is Tom Macy, and I'm the director of the Grand Ron Model Watershed out of La Grande. And I have been following the process and was here and have provided last month, and I have provided written testimony. And some of that is what I'm going to be covering. In fact, that's what I'm going to be covering right now. We represent a success story of getting things done for salmon and habitat rehabilitation. We can concentrate on completing projects on the ground while supporting our local economy. I'd like to make five points associated with our program. And first, I would like to make sure that capital expenditures is defined broadly enough to cover watershed council coordinators and staff assessments and monitoring. Why? I believe that a large portion of the funds for Measure 66 will be used to backfill budget shortfalls in various agencies dealing with salmon issues. I believe that this would be considered part of the 35% for non-capital expenditures, and this would leave little, if any, funding for Watershed Council project support. Without this support, the Watershed Councils would be ineffective, and you would end up wasting money supporting other large bureaucratic agencies to do the same work Watershed Councils can do economically. Backfilling for budget shortfalls may be a legitimate use for Measure 66 funds. However, history tells us that once you utilize these funds in this way, you have set a precedent and open a door for the agencies to fund more and more of their programs and administration. We have seen examples where funded agencies grow into dependence on a source of funds, and this is often not the intention of the funding agency or the voters. Further, monitoring and evaluation and assessment are cornerstones to the measures of accountability for projects. We need monitoring and evaluation as part of our project to balance the programs and to determine our focus. My second point, the GWEB board, or whatever you make it, should have the authority to implement the Oregon plan. Without this authority, you have implementation without accountability. I would recommend that we require accountability of all the funds spent. I'm not sure how you intend to do that, but the accountability is extremely important. Having been in the federal government as a fisheries biologist for over 20 years, I've seen where that accountability just falls apart over time, and people become dependent on a funding source, and the accountability just isn't there anymore. Third, GWEB should, or whatever you want to make it, should be able to give grants to state and federal agencies or anyone else who has a good project to enhance water quality, quantity, or fish habitat. We need to have a conduit in place that has the flexibility to do the right thing as decided by our local representatives. The way it works, and I do emphasize that it does work in our basin, is 100% of the Northwest Power Planning Council Habitat Rehabilitation Funds go through the Watershed Council process. All the agencies and tribes and private entities participate. This is coordinated and requires all projects to pass the same test. The process is locally controlled and locally supported. If we want the federal government and BPA to give money or funds to the Watershed Councils as cost share, we need to be able to demonstrate that we have the latitude to distribute the money to the agency or group that can do the work. Otherwise, we, the state and local entities, will never see the money or have any control over how it is spent, because the federal government will likely give the funds to a federal agency or tribe, NIMS, EPA, the tribes, whatever. If, on the other hand, we have demonstrated that we have the forethought to handle the money and issues wisely at the state and local levels, get constituent support, and coordinate with all the agencies involved, the federal funding sources will be more likely to give the state and local entities the money and local control. This is very important to us. It's taken us a long time to get all of the different agencies and all of the people within our basin on board for the process that we have going. We certainly don't want to lose that. Fourth, the state needs to continue to provide services to Watershed Councils. These councils have proven invaluable to identify specific needs and projects. Managing at too large of a scale, such as a state or federal level, is asking that we have the silver bullet to solve all of the problems everywhere, whether it be state or across the region. This silver bullet does not exist. If we rely on the Watershed Council, we will have local identification of problems and solutions. Please facilitate their efforts and let us own our own solutions. The limited number of success stories we have for fisheries and watershed management in the Columbia Basin are on programs from local watershed level, not at a state or federal level. I want to emphasize that. Most of the programs that we have that are successful has been brought up at a watershed level and not from the state level. Fifth, the GWEB board should be depoliticized. It should be representative of a citizenry and not any specific special interest. This allows it to be a decision-making body that can unbiasedly respond to local representation, and I need to emphasize that it needs to be responsive to local representation. I came to the Grand Ronde Model Watershed Basin a little over a year and a half ago with great ideas about how I could help the region in fisheries and water quality rehabilitation. I had 25 years of fisheries experience, including 7 years with the Forest Service building and leading an aggressive salmon habitat recovery program. I was surprised when I came across the Grand Ronde Watershed Program. Here was an organization making excellent decisions and getting more done on the ground than the established agencies. It was easy to see the organization was not carrying all the baggage of a large agency, including a large bureaucracy and multiple competing tasks. This basically means that we as watershed councils could get more done, almost twice as much as if the money were given to a government agency, a state or federal. I'd like to thank you for allowing me the time to testify before your committee. And I appreciate the hard work that you guys are going through to make this work.
Any query, Ollie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Macy, I have a question about that. One element of your testimony, you indicated that Watershed Council is the best.
Watershed Council.
And so prioritizing watershed projects, and I agree with that. The agency to apply for watershed or for
is the potential that the state and federal agencies would be able
independently, that they might even be doing projects that were.
Are you saying that the state and federal agencies would be able to apply for money through the Watershed Council, the money that we have secured for getting grants?
Let me say this, in one of the discussions that we've been having pretty much since
whether or not we ought to make the Watershed Council and the Federal Water Conservation District lead it.
In another configuration, it basically opens it to all funds. And my concern with the sort of a come one, come all mentality is that we've heard described as random acts of kindness in various watersheds that are not coordinated and don't tear up to a master plan and don't go down to the based on the ground plan that envisions the Watershed Council has adopted by consensus. So, I guess the concept that makes the Watershed Council or the Federal Water Conservation a lead agency allows the federal or state or tribal or other entities to make applications so long as they have a co-applicant who is the Watershed Council or the Federal Water Conservation.
Not making any kind of application for funding. For a couple of reasons. First of all, it puts the
watershed council in direct competition with a federal or state agency that might employ an acre of professional grant writers.
Either your professional coordinator, voluntary, or grant writing staff. Yep. The other thing is federal access. Federal funds for your own budgetary process. State agencies use them to the appropriations process during the legislative session.
Or in the equivalent, if you go to the legislative emergency board.
Yes, directly appropriated. why would I want to have federal and state agencies outside the watershed council or outside the Soil Water Conservation Council?
Right. Getting money out of this project for their
why would I want to make them go through even of the full project?
Well, that is exactly what I'm advocating. I am advocating that they would go through us and follow what we're doing. In our process, the state and federal agencies, they are competing for the same monies. Give the example of Bonneville Power Administration monies, Northwest Power Planning Council. It doesn't matter what agency it is. They go ahead and they put a proposal in, and it would be no different than if a farmer or a person who has a business put in a proposal, and it's going to be considered the same. And what's happened over time is that what we found is that they don't fare any better when they get before a board of directors with 10 people who are basically representing private industry and only 4 that are representing the agency.
Let me break in here. I think we need to move on with our work tonight, but I am interested in all of you answering the question. Do you agree that you would prefer that it go through a sponsorship from the local council?
Yeah, John Runyon with the McKenzie Watershed Council. I agree that it should be sponsored by the local watershed council. Local watershed council can provide sort of an overarching strategy and coordination, and if we have uncoordinated projects, it just doesn't work. And in fact, we currently have a couple of grant applications pending to GWEB in coordination with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, for example, where they are co-applicants with us, and it works great.
Okay. And you, Jim?
In the Applegate, 2/3 of our watershed is owned by the BLM and Forest Service, so we are working together looking at the entire landscape. But we are much more likely to apply for funds jointly. We have not done that to GWEB, but to other granting agencies, we have done that for project proposals. A lot, especially with the BLM of our land, is checkerboard, and so it only makes sense to look at projects across ownership boundaries, and we've done that quite a bit. The other thing that we have done, which is sort of the reverse, is they have provided widened amendment funding for our projects because they do benefit the resources on their own land.
Okay. I'm going to allow this to go on for another 5 minutes. We have 2 more questions. First, Representative Starr, and then Representative King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got 2 questions, one for Jan and one for Tom. Jan, you mentioned in your testimony that you believe the dash 5 amendment would create dissension. Didn't explain, give any explanation for that. Could you give us a little bit of specifics on that?
I did write some comments and sent them up on the dash 5 amendments that kind of detailed some of the concerns that I had. One of the primary ones are the concept of the basin coordinators establishing priorities, and I really feel strongly that the watershed councils and regional groups of watershed councils, we have a coordinating council in the Rogue Basin that has set priorities for the region that we all feel we can work together on. Then at the Applegate level, we, through our assessment process, we're developing our own priorities. I think that's really important to have those different scales of priority setting. And even with the diversity across the state, I'm sure the state can develop some priorities as well. But you have to view those priorities in the scope that they're being proposed. And for watershed council activities, I really feel like the watershed council assessment process is the appropriate way to come to those priorities. The sort of mandatory partnering with the SWCDs on all parts of the operation and joint cohabitation, in office space. would be really difficult for us in the Applegate because we work with the Jackson SWCD and the Josephine SWCD, and our watershed is almost split half and half by those two entities. And we, the one of our board members is the chairperson of the Josephine SWCD, so we work very closely with them on issues that are of concern to them in the Josephine County part of our watershed. And we're working very closely with the Jackson SWCD, especially through their program to provide technical expertise for our project development. And that is working out really very well. So I feel like we're both using our best qualities and getting a lot of things done by just knowing each other really well and finding the ways that we can best partner our resources. And I don't think we need these things dictated because it's going to be really different from one watershed to another.
Thank you. Representative, do you have another question? Representative Kane?
Thank you. Mr. Runyon, I read everything that McKinley Watershed Council sends me. I'm really, proud of what you do. And I agree with everything that's in your letter. And I think virtually everybody here on this board, on this committee, is in agreement with what you're saying there. And really, that's pretty, for some structure and some resources, I think, well said. Our testimony is on House Bill 3225, which restructures GRAB and the Oregon Plan. And I'm a little concerned that we have enough testimony from the Watershed Council and they've had enough time to prepare. So have you had a chance to review House Bill 3225 and be aware of the amendments and be able to, your Watershed Council be able to put forth what you feel is a good structure, for that? Or do you feel that you haven't had the time to be able to do that?
To be honest, we have not had the time for considered deliberation with the Watershed Council. I have to bring forward this testimony just as the Watershed Council coordinator. I haven't had an opportunity to run it by my council, and it's really unfortunate, but the pace is such that we have not had the opportunity to carefully consider it. We've had to throw things together. We've had several opportunities to get together with some Watershed Council coordinators around the state, but even there, we haven't been able to consult at the kind of level both within the McKenzie and with other Watershed Councils that I think would be appropriate with a bill that's going to have such far-reaching implications for us.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate you coming down this afternoon. Committee, what I want to do this afternoon is to run through some topics that staff and co-chair and I have developed that we really need to try to get close to a consensus on. And I have something ready for you Thursday or Thursday. Pass out. There's some things that I think we need to suggest that we take off the table to simplify this process. Number one is the natural resource office, which is in range 2. I think that's the national heritage issue, I think, is another one that needs more time and should. Another one is the regional issue, I think. With that, we've got several topics. I'd like to bring up this evening is the creation of a Parks and Natural Resource Fund and sub-account that I'd like Ken Rocker to maybe bring up today. Thank you. And Judith would like to point you in the right direction to review this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In all of the amendments that deal with creation of the fund, basically we're dealing with the same language that is listed directly from the ballot measure, except for the blank where which agency should be designated as the single agency, which we will get into in just a short while here. But if you will look on, for example, the dash 2 amendments, page 5, starting on line 12, and I would say that the language goes all the way through page 6 onto page 7, ending at line 10, because after that we start to get in the capital expenditure definition, which will be a separate discussion here. So we're looking at the language, as an example, in the dash 2, starting on page 5, line 12.
And would you like to respond or so?
Mr. Chair, Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. Basically, the ballot measure sets out these kinds of this structure. It requires the legislature to create a fund, and the language in the dash 2 is basically taken directly from the ballot measure itself. As we would envision this, there would be the Parks and Natural Resources Fund that would receive the lottery dollars through the normal process of distribution of lottery funds. It's basically an automatic process that once the this fund is created, it would receive the 15% of the lottery revenues quarterly basis. Distributed through the Department of Administrative Services as all lottery dollars are distributed in the state currently. The language here then, because the ballot measure splits the amount in that Parks and Natural Resources Fund into two pieces, 50% into each of these other pieces, one for parks, one for watershed restoration activities. There are two subaccounts created simply to receive that split of dollars into those two subaccounts. And those are called in the language in these dash two, the park subaccount and the restoration and protection subaccount. I think in the sections that staff pointed out, I think the only thing that needs to be reconsidered perhaps is on page 6, line 27, where it basically identifies the Department of Administrative Services as the single agency, and that could be a blank at this time until that decision is made.
Ken, I have a note that the committee had some discussion about use of the term native. Like on line 17, it says native salmonid. On 29, it's and other native species. Is that out of the ballot measure?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, yes, it is.
Any other concerns or questions on this matter? The question then is, at that level, whether it would be administered through the Department of Administrative Services or some other
department. Mr. Chair, the language in line 27 on page 6 would make that designation of the single agency that the ballot measure directs the legislature to appoint or anoint. The mechanism of getting the money into those accounts will be done by the Department of Administrative Services, regardless of what agency is identified in this in that section of the bill.
So we're talking about whether it would be DAS or Water Resources or a standalone agency.
Oh, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As a point of clarification, if you look back on page 5 of the dash 2's line at the end of line 14 and beginning of line 15, you also see a designation of that single state agency. There we would designate whatever the agency is, whatever that would be. It would be my understanding that on page 6, line 27, there we were talking more about the administration of the sub-account fund. And there's the second decision point there is to who would administer the money in the sub-account.
Representative King, my memory is we've had previous testimony on this, and that currently on page 6, line 27, in the sub-account, that that's currently being done by the water department versus DAS. My understanding was it was DAS that initially took the check, but it wasn't necessarily DAS that needed to do the sub-account.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, currently the grant program for the Oregon Plan, the Watershed Improvement Grant Plan, is administered by the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board, which is administratively a part of the Water Resources Department. Also currently, however, the Department of Administrative Services distributes all the lottery dollars in the state. They distribute that on a quarterly basis to the agencies and the programs identified by the legislature to receive those money. So they both do that. And currently nobody does what is in line 27 because this would be a new sub-account created. But the grant program is currently conducted by and administered by the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm wondering now is if the Department of Administrative Services would be the agency that does the transfer to all the other agencies. It's designated an agency outside of that one, for instance, Water Resources Department or the other. I'm just creating another item on a budget spreadsheet. In fact, we're going to be doing transfers electronically and by naming another agency and then yet another repository for the funds that actually does the grant administration another, or the transfer named directly to the state agencies that would be receiving salmon dollars as part of the option packages that are at the heart of the Oregon plan. Or we just be ending it essentially with a spreadsheet with tracking devices as a matter of course, and not actually designating anything that makes a difference. Otherwise, the money has to get to the sub-accounts where they can be used by either parts of the sand restoration project, and what agencies they go through on the way are just create paper trails. That's all it
is. Mr. Chair, Senator Fairley, I believe that my understanding of one proposal is exactly that regardless of how the agency that will distribute the grant funds is constructed, whether it's the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board or another entity that's created, that entity would still be responsible for distributing the grant funds, paying checks to grant recipients, and doing that those kinds of administrative functions. The Department of Administrative Services would have no role in that level of oversight. So the staff would simply be the agency that would distribute the lottery funds, the Measure 66 lottery funds, to the state agencies and other groups that were designated to receive those funds.
That's very well. I guess my observation is that although some folks have put forward the Water Resources Department, it's sort of an emotional favor. Because in fact, Water Resources Department won't make any of the designations for these dollars. It's just a place where we put the money originally. So, DAS, as far as I'm concerned, DAS is the person or the organization that does lottery distribution. I don't know if we need to complicate this by running it through anybody else's books before they finally get to the accounts and sub-accounts to run together.
And I guess maybe we should clarify this in my own mind. I would just say that whether we, if we do this as a suggestion to DAS, and then those funds would go from there to, if we had expanded OWEB, it would probably go to Water Resource Department. If we have set them up as a separate department and commission, and it would go directly to that department. That's correct, Mr. Chair. That's one path of doing this would be to say the bulk of the resources that are available for capital expenditures through grant projects would be through whatever agency you decide to select, whether it's an expanded enhanced CWEB, whether it's another entity. That entity would be responsible for providing the grant, making decisions on the grant, providing the money, and paying all the bills under the grant program.
I think on page 5, the Oregon Department of Administrative Services makes a lot of sense. That's where the money goes for. When it comes, and it goes from them into sub-accounts, and they handle that piece of it. We've known from the beginning that the first agency to touch this money, we didn't have much of any control over, and I think that DAS is the appropriate one for that. Afterwards, because I'm one of these people who thinks it ain't broke, we shouldn't do too much fixing, it makes sense to me to change the one on page 6 to the Water Resources Department and have the money go to them, much as money flows through them now, and then from there they go wherever they need to go. The second agency, which in this case I'm suggesting would be Water Resources, we have complete control over as a legislature through the Ways and Means process. The second agency, we can say, this money goes here, this money goes there. But I think it's all in place now to do that, the staff's there to do that, the accounting stuff is there to do that, so it makes sense to me to continue that.
Thank you, Senator. If we set up a separate commission, then what would be the function of the one?
Well, I guess being how I wasn't headed for a separate commission, I haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay. Could I understand a little bit better the process here, what we're going through? Because I'm worried about, and when you talk about concepts, are you talking about taking this now and turning it into forms of amendments and wanting us to write off on it now and approval? I don't understand exactly what the chairs have in mind for the process that you're using.
I'm not asking for a vote tonight, but what I would like to get is a consensus, at least so that we can give direction to our staff. That doesn't mean this is your final vote, no. We have to start saying the pulling this to a conclusion. And if we
thank you, Chair. I agree with the co-chair. I just want to do it the simplest way that works effectively. But Senator Dukes, I think has a point here. It seems to me this is a different level. That DAS is a different level on page 6 than it is on page 5. And I'm not sure who belongs in page 6, if that's maybe the commission that we're going to work with. It seems like that's where you identify them. And then I'm not sure if we actually specify it goes through to the Water Resource Department or not. But it seems to me like it's a step process. And I'm not sure on what that. We haven't decided what the commission is, so I don't know who to put in that line, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree with the two previous speakers here. DAS is the appropriate place on page 5 because when I first Senator Duke and I passed out a parks budget, and that's how the money comes in to a lot of through DAS, and then it's distributed from there. As far as the other agency, I think we should go with an independent new commission for the distribution of the money on that.
And I understand what Representative Starr said, but I think it's getting kind of a bit ahead of ourselves. The question at this point isn't whether Water Resources administers the grant programs at this point. What we have is we have a sub-account, and out of that, so if that sub-account is in Water Resources, all the money goes there, and then they allocate money back to other agencies. It makes sense to me. It's already in DAS. The sub-account's there, and the money gets allocated direct to where it needs to go out of DAS, which would include the water resources getting the grant funds, if indeed that's where we wanted to go. But to a degree, I think we're complicating things here. If on page 6 we go out of depth because we're going into an agency and then back into other agencies, it already exists there. It's allocated out to wherever it's going, and some of this is going to go to ODF&W, some of it's going to go to various other state agencies, and it could go there from DAS probably cleaner than trying to transfer it into another agency and then back out to another agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I now understand from Mr. Rocco that indeed the language from the ballot measure in designating a single state agency, really the first reference on page 5, line 14, is essentially duplicative. We could leave it there or not. And that on line 27, page 6, it does need to be the agency that receives that initial 50% split is the single state agency we're talking about designating, that which is a separate issue from who is going to administer the grant. So this would be the point at which, from this single state agency that has the control of that sub-account, then would funnel the money, the bulk of which would go to the entity that we create for the granting authority.
Mr. Chair, what Representative Cruz just said is exactly what we're trying to communicate. He did a very good job of communicating.
And did you restate that, Ken Rocker? Because I think the confusion is that of those funds that go to restoration and protection, some of those funds are going to go directly to other departments. The bulk of those funds are going to go to the granting authority.
Yes.
And I think that's where the confusion is here at our board level.
And
that's why it makes sense to me to let that, at that level, let it go through that. And then at the next level, it would be whether we have a board or a commission.
Mr. Chair, that's correct, because the bulk of those funds would go to whatever granting organization that you have in mind, and then that organization would be responsible for administering the grant program.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just seem to me, with all the details and complications here, the most important thing is we have to try to get as most money as we possibly can out on the ground. And I guess I'm confused, because for me to create another agency to do that, that sort of defeats that purpose from my viewpoint. And it seems like we have a fair amount of programs that are now actually working in conjunction with things. And I still haven't quite got the grasp of the details how to do that, but perhaps Mr. Rocco could either give his opinion. How is the best way that we can get the most money on the ground? I guess that's the question I haven't resolved in my mind yet, and I think that's the key question.
Thank you, Chairman. My observation is that we might be overcomplicating this issue by the fact that we're going to be making some allocations to state agencies in this legislative session for this interim. But hereafter, I have those direct appropriations to state agencies. But as we have talked in this other places about the interim strategy for connecting where we are to where we need to go. And so I was assuming that some transfers would take place during this biennium to state agencies for support of the Oregon plan that spills into state agency budgets. We heard that back though. I'm not sure that would continue forward from this point. So I'm wondering if we don't need to talk about that interim process for a minute. I'd like to have Mr.
Rocco. Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, even if there is not an issue of backfill in the future, there still may be a use of Measure 66 dollars for agency activities related to salmon and watershed issues in the future, in future biennia, for enhancement packages or other kinds of programs that are currently not anticipated in budgets. And I would foresee in the future that you would still be providing dollars from this ballot measure to agency operations. It may not be for backfill, but it may be for new efforts.
Any questions,
Chair? That's anything.
Thank you. It's my understanding that we don't have any argument about where the lottery money goes to in the DAS. It's also my understanding that we want GLAB to continue administering the grants and that works most effectively by going through the Water Resources Department. But what I don't know here for sure is if there are any other distributions that need to be made besides grant money. For example, will watershed councils be receiving any direct funding, through the budget process aside from grants, or is the only way they can get money through the grant process? And are we building that into this structure?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, in the current biennium, the Watershed Improvement Grant Fund has been the source, which is administered by the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board, has been the source of funding for local watershed councils through a grant process. It's the same kind of relationship could work under this arrangement where you would provide the funding for those kinds of activities to this organization, either GWEB, OWEB, or commission, and allow them to pass that money on to local watershed councils, which I think watershed councils are generally in favor of because they receive a relatively good turnaround on receiving those dollars.
So are you saying then that when we are paying money out to non-agency entities, that the only way they're going to get that money is through the grant process, which then could be done by Water Resources Department?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, that's correct. There has to be some state agency to pass that money on to local groups. So the most efficient means so far has been through that granting organization.
So, for example, we would not expect DAS to be cutting payroll checks to watershed coordinators, for example.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, not at all. The Department of Administrative Services would not be doing that at all.
Any other comments? Senator Morgan?
Let me just throw something out here. That one of the problems that we're having right now with tracking the money that's going into salmon restoration is that there isn't any central place that is keeping track of the accounting of it. And so if we're going to be leaving a chunk of the money in DAS, which is my understanding of what we're going to be doing, leaving a chunk of money there that will go to agency, and then moving a chunk of it down to someplace else that will be used for grant purposes, we're going to be just kind of perpetuating the same problem, where there isn't going to be one place where we're going to be able to see how all of that money is being used.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the way we will track dollars is we have a separate tracking mechanism for lottery dollars. We have lottery limitations that we provide to agencies. So you will be able to track by individual agency the amounts that they are provided because you're going to allocate dollars to the various agencies involved in the Measure 66 funding, and then you'll see how much of those dollars they expended when they come in with their next budget proposal. We track the expenditures by fund type, and that's a separate fund type for us.
Can I have a follow-up?
Sure.
How is that different than the situation we're in right
now? Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the situation now, you can still track the dollars, but you are more reliant on the agency to provide you with details since, for example, the Oregon Plan dollars are general fund dollars, and they're just incorporated within the total general fund appropriation for the agency. And in many cases, these agencies don't have other lottery funds, so we will be able to have an accounting by lottery fund type of how many dollars they've expended for salmon-related activities.
Pardon me, folks? Yes.
What would be the downside, or I guess why would it not be a good idea to have all of the Measure 66 monies go to whatever agency is going to disseminate grant funds and have all of that money be disseminated from that place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I guess there's, that could work. That's definitely a possibility. The only difficulty that we see is that in this biennium, a number of the recipients of those dollars are going to be state agencies. And we were just looking at splitting that away from the capital expenditure part, which we anticipate will not be going to state agencies, so that there is a clear differentiation between what's available for state agency expenditures and which is not. However, you could do it that way and still account for all the dollars. You can account for all the dollars through the Department of Administrative Services, however, also, because they're going to be distributing those monies basically into a series of agencies receiving money for administrative expenses or operational expenses, and then the monies that would flow into whatever grant providing organization you establish. So yeah, you could do it either way, obviously.
Let me ask a question, Mr. Rockwell. Maybe this will clarify. If we sent the total amount to the board of the commission, some of those funds, as we've been talking about, are base support through the state, other state agencies, such as ODF&W or Department of Ag or DEQ or whatever, are very essential for the support of the Oregon plan. So if we send it all to, say, the granting agency, is there a mechanism that the budget process that we go through here in the building as legislators, we could pass those funds straight through, or would it have to be would that be a determination of the commission?
Mr. Chair, I think it depends on the language you have developed in establishing the commission and the type of requirements for grants under that commission. In our eyes, it would be easier to use the Department of Administrative Services and make that allocation to the agencies and then have the money directly passed into those agencies for those programs that you were mentioning. It would be a simpler process.
And I guess to go further, if the decision was to be made by the commission for that total amount, in this case $43 million, that would make it very difficult for the agencies, because what we would have to do was underfund those agencies with a budget note to tell them to go to the commission and request those funds, unless there's a mechanism that we could prevent that.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
I'm getting body language from Pat Amadeo. Would you come up and interpret that for us?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair, for the record, Pat Amadeo. The thinking is this, that there are bits and pieces of the Oregon plan throughout state government. There is not one place in which you can see how much of the Oregon plan we are spending. We wanted 100% of the money, of the salmon money, just like 100% or the 7.5% went to the parks budget, to go to the single lead agency, the single lead substantive agency, not DAS. We assume that some of that money will go back to state agencies, but if they are partnered with a local entity, and I have no doubt that will be the case. If you assume that the grant money, 65% only, goes to state agencies, goes to the fund, the 35% will disappear into the guts of agencies, and Ken has just told you how much easier it will be to kind of disseminate that money through state governments. We're not interested in making it easy to use that money to backfill. We want that money to really go to the highest priority functions in state government. We do also do not anticipate that all 35% of it will go back into state agencies. We think some of it might well go to fund watershed coordinators. That is not a capital expenditure. Some of it might go to fund soil and water conservation district administrators. That is not a capital expenditure. The 65% is limited to capital expenditure. We would prefer it all to go to the single lead agency. The budget committees will see how all of that money is being spent. Whether they'll see that the 65% is being spent in grants, in capital expenditures, and you can take that agency budget while you're looking at all the other budgets and see how much it is designated to any other state agency in Oregon, plus how much might go to soil and water, how much might go to watershed councils. We just think for the lay person who wants to comment on it, it is far easier to have it all in a single entity. If you want to disperse that money quickly without, you know, as much accountability, at least for those kind of looking into the process, you do what he suggested.
We don't agree with that. We would like it all to go to the independent agency or an agency.
Pat, let me ask you this. In your opinion, does the legislature have authority to designate where some of that funding goes?
I assume the legislature will do to that component of the fund exactly what it did to parks, which was it looked at parks budget, how they spent the ballot measure 44 money, and they made adjustments and suggestions to it. We assume that you will look at how the lead agency plans on spending the ballot measure 66 money and to make adjustments and corrections to it, but you will see it in a single budget document rather than now dispersed throughout state, throughout government.
I'm troubled, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, and that is in the time frame. We're right now developing the budgets for other state agencies. It seems to me that what you're suggesting, there'd be a time lag there.
And we assume that there would be transition language that would be necessary to make this particular entity function as we anticipated it would function. This budget cycle will be very difficult. I mean, we're still trying to figure out how the Ways and Means Committee is contemplating spending the 35%. So we anticipate in future biennia we would know that in a single budget document and we could comment on it much more easily. But we understand that there is a time lag based on this biennium.
Do you have any more comments, Mr. Russell?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it'll be in a single document because if there is an allocation of these funds to various entities, that would be in a single document and it would be very evident where the monies would be flowing, whether it's providing sure funding for Oregon Plan activities and agency budgets for the next biennium, or whether it's providing a source of funds for some kind of a grant fund for on the project side. So that will be.
And so that's a legislative decision.
That's yes, it is.
Very well.
It's clear to me that whether or not these dollars are part of the Oregon Plan or the heart and soul of the Oregon Plan, or the guts and feathers of the Oregon Plan, clearly to the eye of the beholder. As long as the stream of investment and funding is clearly disclosed and clearly delineated and available in a single document, I don't know if it matters which entity does the accounting.
Can I answer that, Mr. Chair? It does matter to us because the entity that makes the recommendation, the lead agency, on how its sister agencies or if its sister agencies get money, helps coordinate the Oregon Plan. If you've got
kind of the people who know the most about the Oregon plan making the decisions or recommendations before you see it on where it should go, we think that is far superior than having DAS make that recommendation to fill budget shortfalls.
But your DAS doesn't make recommendations to fill budget shortfalls, nor authorize expenditures by the legislature. And as a matter of fact, the only thing that we are absolutely certain on, I believe, is if any administrative funds out of this, if they become the agency that does distribute the dollars,
But that's the first blush of how it's spent, is the governor's budget.
Mr. Fisher, DAS doesn't do anything by its own authority. It does so by legislative and executive direction, period.
Correct.
Thank you. That's
Mr. Co-Chair, I'm not sure how you want to handle this, but I'm ready to go ahead and let, I believe that as we have this written is appropriate. I think it is the agency that allows the legislature to work through, or the Department of Administrative Services. It's the one we're accustomed to making those kind of allocations out, and it seems to me it's consistent. I understand what Pat is saying, but seems to me like really this is probably the appropriate agency here. And I would, you know, I don't feel open for them to move these amendments or however, but I'd be willing to go ahead with that.
Okay. I have one more question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is perhaps to get a clarification from the co-chair. The question has to do is how much is this cost that we're supposed to have? Trace the money?
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, I think it was the intention that we would include budget notes that would allow DAS to charge for any of the costs associated with making electronic transfers to the entity.
That would be my concern with it, that there not be a government charge to transfer money.
And our goal is no church. Representative Morgan.
Just a point of clarification on Representative Lundquist's comment. When you were talking about the agency that's in there, are you talking about DAS on the second level or water resources on the second level?
Well, I'm talking on page 6. As well as page 5. I don't think there's any, excuse me, Mr. Chair, I don't believe there's any disagreement or consideration of page 5, but on page 6 I'm talking about.
Be the agency on page 6? Okay.
Okay. I'd like some indication as to where you want to go on this. Was that a...
I would move a... I don't know how you want to do this, but the lines 24 through 28 be accepted.
And I'd like to, if we do have a motion just to show indication, I would like to make it clear that this is not binding, that once we get the package put together and then one form that we can look at again. And I'm seeing Representative Starr shaking his head no. What is your concern, Representative?
It is about where we're going with that. I'm not talking about the agency that's going to determine the grant funds at this point.
Oh, no, no.
I think I'd rather, than a formal motion, I'd rather just see a show of hands.
What?
And just so that we have an indication of and give direction to staff.
I kind of have my hand.
And this is, as is in the page 6 on dash 2. Those in favor, raise a hand.
I'm reading it in DAS on the second level.
Right.
This is a strange mess.
And these are the past. These are the past through level. That's Cindy Morgan.
This is not the level of the grant money. This is the top level.
Right.
Oh,
okay. It's actually the second level, but it will not be the grant fund.
Sure. On the park side, is on the second level, is that still in DAS?
No.
They only have one agency to deal with. Makes it much simpler.
Conceptually, it's no different.
I'd like to ask Roy Hemingway, could you give us some clarification on where the governor might be on this issue?
Roy Hemingway, governor's office. We would support the Dash 2 amendments as written. I think this discussion has really been a stalking horse for the future discussion about whether this agency or this entity you're creating has authorities beyond grant making, whether it has coordination of it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if we got a good count or not. Did you get a good count, Steph? Or do we need to do that exercise one more time?
I think we need to just call that position.
Is there anyone opposed to this plan? That's a much bigger question.
Sorry, I just want to vote.
I can vote. Senator Pardo? Yes.
We got caucus at 6 o'clock, Mr. Chairman. What's your pleasure? Are you going to vote anything else?
We will not vote this afternoon. But I want to caution you, Senator Carno, we have pizza coming and you'll miss the
pizza. We hope you're in a hurry. I'm just glad to move. We'll just finish this thing here.
And he didn't pay for the pizza either.
Staff has a statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. Just for clarification, first of all, our intention is to pull pieces of the puzzle together for a Dash 11 amendment, which this committee will have a final vote on. You'll be able to see the actual language. But in order to get us to that point, we're hoping to get whatever agreement we can on what pieces are going to be included in the Dash 11. So that's the confusion. We would like decision points as we go along on the pieces to pull into the Dash 11, and with the understanding that the final vote, the final decision point, will be when we see that amendment. Okay, so yes, we're voting in a sense to pull pieces into the committee amendment, but again, you'll have another chance to cast your final vote on the amendment as a whole.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Thompson.
What I tried to do in bringing the day 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 forward was to try to give the committee the ability to vote in sections. So that I worry about when you go to a Dash 11, you pull it all together, that we may have to swallow the pill that's big, like a big horse pill, instead of actually getting to each section. That's why I've been having problems with what we're doing.
I'm not sure that it's intended. That is, that we can't go beyond that and have a discussion about that. I don't think we're going to look at it straight up or down vote.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm worried that already here I see Representative Cruz in a committee of 14 people where Representative Cruz and Representative Starr, I'm worried that they may not at some point be able to vote for the whole package because of an individual thing that's bothered them. And if that goes around in each of these sections as we go forward, I can see it developing where we will not get to a Dash 11. That's why what I'm suggesting is you break it apart in areas where there might be controversy, so that when we actually get it and we have a chance to go through the normal legislative process to look at as amendments and take the votes, that way the other representatives that may have problems with things don't have to swallow too big a pill.
Well, I can write this thing if you want.
That's fine. I may have a problem with that pill.
You got it. What I'd like to do is call for a recess. We've got our pizza getting cold, and then we'll come back in 10 minutes and continue.
We should make a note of a lot of them.
I can ask you folks to find the seat again, please. What I'd like to do to proceed is our next thing I want, or item I want to bring up on the agenda is the legal fund discussion, and the reason I need to do that is because we've got Mr. Whitman here from the Attorney General's office, and he's on an hourly rate, I just found out. I'd like to ask the work group to come up and clarify some issues they've been working on, and then committee will go straight to the commission or the board.
Sure. Could I ask one question?
Sure.
Does he get overtime? I mean, this Republican is squandering money. It really affects him.
My co-chair says he's billing the minority party. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. Richard Whitman, for the record, from the Oregon Department of Justice. And for this committee, there's a special rate.
Higher than usual?
No, as long as I get my coffee, my time in the audience doesn't get billed. So,
take care of that.
You're doing just fine. We met a couple of weeks ago with legislative counsel and staff from the Attorney General's office and also staff from the Governor's office to talk about this particular piece of the puzzle, which is the legal defense fund for the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. And I've handed out to the committee some draft language with changes to this particular section of 3225. And let me talk first about what the intent here is and the changes. The first purpose of the changes is to deal with a concern that I believe was raised by legislative counsel in one of your earlier committee hearings, and that concerns the initial language in Section 25, which would have the Oregon Attorney General representing private parties whose actions are challenged under the Federal Endangered Species Act. There are provisions in existing law in ORS 180, and specifically ORS 180-060, that require the Attorney General to only represent the state and agencies and entities that are part of state government. And we have a general concern with the original language that it could get us into situations where we're representing multiple parties, both the state and private citizens, where we would potentially have a conflict. So the first purpose of the changes is to deal with that concern, but still maintain the spirit of the legislation, which is where a private citizen takes an action that is consistent with the Oregon plan and consistent with state law, to be able to help in the defense of that action where it's challenged as violating the Federal Endangered Species Act. That we can do. We can participate in the legislation. We can intervene, for instance, as the state on the side of a landowner whose action is challenged and can help provide the defense, but we can't be legally responsible for defending that particular landowner. So we've changed the language in here to provide that, first of all. Second thing we've done is we've broadened the scope a little in a couple of particulars. First of all, it was the sense of our working group that it would be a good idea to also include situations where an action is challenged as violating the Federal Clean Water Act as well as the Federal Endangered Species Act. So we've added in language to do that. The other broadening provision is the original language just talked about defending actions. And as I think most people know, one important role of lawyers, in addition to going to court and helping defend actions is to advise agencies, watershed councils, and others when they have been challenged to try to avoid the litigation. So we've added some broadening language to put that concept in as well. The other concerns that I think were raised by the legislative council that we share, frankly, were to put some sideboards on this, to clarify who makes the decision as to when it's appropriate for the state to be involved in this way. So we put in the subsections A and B there that you see in the new language, some sideboards on the expenditure of this money. First sideboard is to assure that the action that we're involved in defending is consistent with the Oregon plan and in compliance with state law. And the second sideboard is we want to make sure we have a process for consulting with both the governor's office and with the president of Senate and Speaker of the House before making a decision on these things. We think that's streamlined enough so that we can move quickly as we'll need to do in some of these situations. So that's basically the purposes of the amendments that you see to this section.
Thank you very much, Mr. Whitman. That makes a lot of sense. Jeanette, did you have anything to add to that?
Mr. Chair, no, Richard and I have been talking about this as he worked on him. I don't think I have anything to add. I'd be glad to answer questions if I can.
Okay. Mr. Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. I appreciate the additions, but does having this preemptive strike add significantly to the cost, or do we have any way to gauge that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, I don't believe so. In a lot of instances, it will be less expensive for us to work in that role rather than when we get into court. And it's really too late to do anything to avoid the legal challenge.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. You talked about the ability to have a quick turnaround. Is that a quick turnaround in the sense of government or in the sense of the real world? I mean, what kind of time frames are we talking about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, It's intended to be quick turnaround in the real world sense. I mean, we have to operate in the real world. There are court deadlines that need to be met. There, for instance, under both the Federal Clean Water Act and Federal Utilities Act, there are 60-day notices of intent to sue that are filed. And there are certain things that can be done within that time window to try to avoid litigation. We believe this will give us the ability to do those things where they're appropriate, where they're not appropriate, and we have to go ahead and litigate. Fine, but I think this is workable.
Mm-hmm. Senator Thompson,
in your wording here, you've in your original bill, it was to deal with the Federal Endangered Species Act, and then in this proposal, the -5, it's the Federal Water Pollution Control Act. That could open up a whole set of far-reaching lawsuits that far expand, I think, what the intent of the original initiative is. Do I understand that correctly? Can you respond to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, I think the Oregon Plan for Feminine Watersheds all along has had a clean water component in it, the Healthy Streams Partnership. And we believe that this accurately represents the scope of the Oregon Plan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, I would also add that in paragraph A, it's required before you can proceed that it be consistent with the Oregon Plan. So
right.
That would limit it, I would think, to a certain extent.
No. I guess to a degree, I agree with you, but this can get into a whole different thing. If you wind up with a governor and a Speaker of the House and the President all of the same party, and then in the inside of this, sometime in the future, and with the Pollution Control Act, that gets way out here on the edge and it gets the fringe area, whether that has to do with salmon plan, I can see where you could get into all kinds of lawsuits in the future in this area. I'm a little bit nervous about that. If we stayed with the Endangered Species Act, too, I don't have a problem. You get in the Pollution Control Act, I'm a lot more nervous. And I think it's going to be a very expensive dark hole in the future. And I don't think that's exactly what the proponents had in mind. I'm not sure.
I think, Representative Thompson, you make a point, but I don't know how we can separate out, or I would be opposed to separating out the different parts of the Oregon Plan. And the Oregon Plan does deal with both those aspects. So, and it is at the discretion of the leadership. I think the qualifications we put on that would narrow it down to where it can't get out of control. If it gets to be too expensive.
I'm really worried that we're going to have Democrats in all the controls in the future. Where it
goes. And that worries you? Representative Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure that I understood fully as you were going through your explanation of this. So help me a little bit. We're saying that if an individual out here operating in good faith under the Oregon Plan, with the endorsement and support of the agency or agencies, is brought to trial or brought into a court case, that fundamentally will be there kind of alongside of him, but he's really kind of hanging out here to dry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, what we're saying is where the landowner or property owner has taken an action that hasn't been endorsed by a state agency, either by funding of that action or by some agency approval, that the state agency will have the ability to participate in that lawsuit, either by intervening or by filing under the court brief or whatever happens to be appropriate in that particular instance. At the same time, the state attorney general can't, under other provisions of law, be legally responsible for the defense of that individual. We can work with them. We can carry a large part of the legal work that needs to be done for defending that landowner. But in a legal sense, that landowner needs to have their own counsel advising them on what's best for that particular person.
I'll follow with that fundamentally that landowner is going to pay the $125,000 in attorney fees that his attorney piles on.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I think the hope is that this will, by having the state help in the defense, reduce the cost to that landowner. Instead of $125,000, it might be $25,000. It's going to depend on the particular circumstances.
You'll appreciate that I wouldn't be very fond of the $25,000.
I can understand that, Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen. Nobody wants to get sued, and part of the reason for the amendments to this particular provision are to also allow us to work with landowners to avoid them getting sued.
I think staff wants to
clarify. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Whitman, if you could answer a question. In the Dash-2 Amendment, page 21, line 25, where this language is coming from that you're recommending amending. Again, Dash-2 Amendment, page 21, line 25, there is, right at the beginning of that sentence, it says that to the limits of the fund. And that is the only thing in Section 25 that I'm not seeing reflected in your proposed amendment. Could you explain that either the reason why that was eliminated, or if in fact if you added that language after your suggestion, or the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, to the limits of the fund, whether that would ease people's mind if we had a cap on the total expenditures?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Callens, that was an oversight. The omission of that language, that should be added in.
Senator Cruz?
Just a clarification, Mr. Chair, from what Representative Jensen was saying. See if I got this straight. The state will not be defending the landowner, but they will be defending the actions of the landowner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, that's correct.
I just want to say, Mr. Whitman, I expect that the omission that we just mentioned will be reflected in our charge.
We just knocked him.
So that if the landowner gets sued, if somebody thinks the actions of the landowner has damaged them, that they don't sue the state agency, this fund doesn't help at all.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, it does help. This does not require that the state agency be sued.
Okay, so they go to the state agency to ask, what do I do now? State agency goes to you for legal advice?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, it could either happen that way, or the state agency could come to us directly once they hear that the landowner has been sued. Either the landowner could go to the agency comes to us, landowner could come to us, we talk to the agency. It could happen in a variety of ways.
The landowner is still out there hiring an attorney.
Yes.
I think we missed where we were headed. It's close.
Senator Ferraioli.
Congress, I think the assumption is that the action pursuant to the lawsuit taken by the landowner to the authority conferred to the landowner by virtue of a permit. Some other action that rests on Oregon's land or some authority, whatever they're being sued about. A statute that allows the action to take place. I don't think there was ever the state of Oregon was have all the legal responsibility for defending every action of a landowner. But I think there was a time when we envisioned that if the state issued a permit, as long as the landowner stayed within the parameters of the permit, the licensor, the authority, to defend the basis on which the decision was made, usually where the legal challenge under the after the Clean Water Act comes. But the decision was made incorrectly for the permit parameters or not. Because we need to be questions that are caught in court, not the substantive decision. The technical basis is that the state has taken care of it. Still, we'll have some attorneys. So we're in.
Senator King?
Yeah, it's my understanding that to the limit, takes into account the individual or the local government, but that since the state would be involved in litigation and, you know, if the case wasn't over, that might mean that the state ends its dedication of funding for the landowner or the local government, but it would still have the ability to continue on representing the state until the issue was resolved. And also on another note, and you can respond to that, but on another note, I think that on the third line of your writings, after the word fund, I think you want a comma. Take fund, comma, or authorize. If I'm reading it different.
Brendan, did you want to comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative King, I think your characterization is correct. The state could continue to participate even if the fund was exhausted, so long as the whatever state entity is paying the bill wants to keep on paying the bill.
Senator Crail,
we could track these things until all 125 state agencies were bankrupt.
Sure.
Chairman, isn't it far more likely for the landowner or the person in the agency to repeat the
state entity?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, actually what we're starting to see is a number of lawsuits develop across the country where the target of the lawsuits alleging the violation of the Endangered Species Act or the Clean Water Act typically are not landowners, but they're state agencies. And the reason for that is that's where you get your biggest bang for the buck. If a plaintiff can show that a state agency program violates the Federal Endangered Species Act, they have the ability to achieve a result in a lawsuit that is much more far-reaching than going after an individual landowner. Which is not to say there are not and will not continue to be suits against individual landowners, but we're starting to see that trend.
Thank you. Any other comments? Nettie, what is your, is there any opposition to moving forward with the new amendment, with the addition? Is that a vote, or did you want to, okay. Do we have anyone in opposition? Thank you very much. I think it's been very helpful.
Thank you.
Now, I've been promised that, yeah, we're moving forward. Let's not stop now. I've been promised that if I allowed Mr. Miller to explain some of the work that the work group has been doing, that it might be helpful, and that he'll be very brief. So, Greg, would you like to come forward?
Mr. Chair, which work group did you see? The first work group or the second work group? This one got expanded a whole bunch.
This is the expanded work group.
I didn't think so, because it's now came up in a disclaimer that said they couldn't reach consensus on that committee.
We'll find out.
I love this guy. He's smiling with every chance of the
girl. For the record, Greg Miller of Weyerhaeuser Company. A long time ago in a galaxy far away. Senator Deutsch is correct. The request here was to present the kind of the first work group, the natural resource work group's deliberations. As you recall, I came to you in the expanded work group and I showed you a product that has been corrected for the record relative to capital expenditure definitions, et cetera. What we talked about, and as you folks caucus all the time, so do we. I'm in an awkward position here because I helped facilitate the larger work group. I also chaired the natural resource work group. And I sympathize with the work that you folks all have to do in crafting legislation. Ours is just as ugly because it looks like sausage. But the reality is we fell back to looking at this set of 10 principles that we got broad agreement over with, among, and we took our dash 5 that you folks have had a copy of, and we, a smaller natural resource work group, decided to try to squeeze through the dash 5s, get agreement on language in dash 5 relative to these broad areas of agreement. I do not have all the, I do not have copies for all of you in terms of that product. We've taken the dash fives, carved them up. I'm not sure of what benefit it would be to for me to go through a copy that you do not all have, but it is a product that we would like to see the committee at least consider. We're not going to ask for these to be entered in as dash amendments. We don't want to confuse
the committee with another set of dash amendments. You folks are on a process here to look at all the different documents, but we do, we did feel an obligation as the Natural Resource Work Group to try and come to agreement on the dash 5 wording, because, you know, once you make legislation with words, you need to kind of get some agreement on those words. Along with that, there's also a roadmap. I have given a copy to Judith, and she can make copies for the whole committee when you choose to read that at your bedside stand. This product does not have agreement with the broader work group. I have had hallway conversations. So there is some concern over some of the carving that we have done in this. We were very efficient in trying to make a smaller document, but I think the other thing that we were trying to do is also listen to watershed councils, soil watershed districts. Don't force marriages. Let them kind of evolve on their own. Those kinds of things entered into it as we looked at this, these 10 broad principles. That was done in 5 minutes.
Any brief questions? Stephanie Leonard.
Who was in your group? I'll tell you who was not in our group. We did not have the proponents of 66. We did not have the environmental community. We did not have the governor's office. What we did have was our original core group that included the Farm Bureau, the Cattlemen's Association, landowners, warehouser, of course, 4FIC, I can't recall, Oregon Water Resources Congress, Water for Life, folks like that.
I'm just curious, Mr. Chair, to follow up. When I put together work groups to help me on drafting legislation, whatever it might be, I try to make sure I include people that I don't even necessarily want to hear from, because if I'm going to hear from them in this forum, it's better to have them come to the work group so it can all be slugged out there, and hopefully we can come up with a consensus proposal. What
were we thinking? Well, we tried that. Excuse me, co-chairs, Representative Leonard. We tried that about a week and a half ago. We got lots of comments on our dash five from the broader work group. I felt like the Forest Service trying to synthesize public input on an EIS. We were not going to be able to accomplish and accommodate everybody. That is not, I don't believe the broader work group believed we could actually get all the way there outside of this process. So, you know, we took a step back, took a 30,000-foot view, and got consensus at this high elevation on these principles. And we felt that the committee then would approach this with those in mind, and you've got, you know, dash 10s, including 5s, to pull in from. But we felt, at least in terms of the smaller caucus, as I'm sure any other interest group out there, that had put some time and effort into a set of dashes to try and get some resolution among our own folks about language. You folks can look at it and see where we're coming from.
Great. And you have a copy of that available?
I can leave this with the folks over there, and you can make copies. And I've also given Judith a copy, so.
That's very Thompson.
Taylor, I very much respect the work that you've done, but I'm also in agreement with my colleague over here that when you exclude the governor's office, and you just went down the number of people you exclude, the environmental community, and I assume there wasn't any Democrats who were a member of this body that were sitting in that room, that I see a probable problem. I'm optimistic that, you know, that they'll be fine, but I worry many times that if you're going to really get a bipartisan approach to something, that you have to have some write-in, even if it isn't necessarily where you want to go, to get an agreement. And I am worried that we're headed in that way with this without reading it. But I do respect your work very much.
Co-chair, Representative Thompson, I appreciate being taken to the woodshed on this. I do think that we did not accomplish and succeed in that work group setting per se. It would have been our desire early on in this process to have an official work group put together and have everybody
at the table, but we just took our best shot in terms of trying to get our beliefs and words on paper so that this process, I'll say it again, this process, this committee, can look at where that interest group is coming from, and you are the folks that are decision makers on which sections you want to have in a bill. So thank you for the compliment on the product, but I appreciate your concern because of that lack of full representation.
And I would think, Greg, that what we've seen is that you did present a consensus of a larger group, and this is indication of more of a thinking of the natural resource group. So it's not to be confused with the work you did with the larger group. And I think if we look at it in those terms, and not only that, it didn't come to us in a dash amendment form, and so if there's thoughts or ideas that we could like or accept, we can use them. If not, fine. Representative King, and then Senator Gooch.
I'd like to comment that, you know, but my colleagues have a concern, I think, in all fairness, that the resource group has had the same deadlines we do, and those are too short to get what we want to do. So it'd be kind of nice to be able to work with consensus groups and advocacy groups, but, you know, there isn't enough time there, and that I am anxious to see their work product. And at the same time, the other groups, you know, are free to put their own work groups, you know, together also, and they're not, you know, presenting, you know, product, and I wish that I was, you know, having a chance to see those. So, yeah, that's our role, to get the best parts we can out of that, and then, you know, if the consensus group, you know, can't bring the consensus, then that's our job to do as much as we can.
Before I call on you, Senator, Representative Thompson, you commented about including the governor and the governor's staff. The co-chair and I have met twice, I believe, with Rory and Paula. And then again with they and the governor. We're meeting tomorrow morning with the governor and his staff again as we're trying to pull this thing together and get by him. So we're certainly not trying to charge down the road without an opinion and the support of the governor's office. Senator Dukes?
I'm just checking. It's getting a little hard to figure out who's on first here. Have you officially abandoned the bigger work group?
No, we haven't officially abandoned the bigger work group. We only could get through this product as the bigger work group.
So you might be back next time with recommendations from the bigger work group?
Well, we haven't set up, co-chair, Senator Dukes, we have not scheduled any meetings with the broader work group. I think what we might have anticipated, and I'm speculating way out on the limb here, is that once this committee got to its dash 11s, we could get back together as a broader work group and mull over those dashes and come to consensus for you or peel off. But at this point, the only product that we're continuing to talk about are the various dashes that you folks have in your possession. So I'm speculating that if you come up with dash 11s, I would love to see our broader work group pull together and read those over and get a feedback on it if we could get to consensus.
You don't expect us out of here soon either, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Any other comments for Greg? Thank you, Greg.
Copies, no.
Okay, thank you. What I'd like to do next, as I mentioned earlier, is go to the discussion of, are we looking at a board or are we looking at a commission? Difference being, in my opinion, that if we're looking at an expanded OIG web, it would probably be within a department, probably a water resources department. If we go to a commission, we're talking really about a standalone department. As far as the function of the group, I'm not sure. I don't see if there'd be much difference at all. Any discussion? I'll let Judith walk through the variations here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. On the sheet that we had talked about the other day with the two lines, you see the GWEB structure, the current structure on that right-hand column, and the dash 5 structure on the left-hand column. I want to point out, first of all, that all of the amendments specify the five commission members as Environmental Quality Council, Environmental Quality Commission, Water Resources Commission, Board of Forestry, Board of Agriculture, which replaces the Soil and Water Conservation District under current law, and then the Fish and Wildlife Commission. So those are five.
Correction, it's Soil and Water Commission, not the district.
Thank you. Okay. So that's five of the members, and that is identical in all of the amendments with respect to the membership. What's different in some of the amendments is the additional six public members for a total of 11. So in the -5 amendment on page 6, you will see those six additional representatives being two watershed council members, one from the east side, one from the west side, two Soil and Water Conservation District members, east and west, a tribal representative, and one public member. The second...
I think I need to break in here because I think there's a bigger question that we need to talk about first. I think the makeup of the committees really doesn't depend on whether we have a commission or a board. And what we're really talking about, I think we need to talk about which way we want to go and where we want to base that first, and then we can get down to the discussion of how we make up those boards. I personally think that if we go to a commission, which I think would be very workable, that we not have language in the amendment that would give them oversight over other state agencies. I think that is properly the governor's role. And I'm not sure that it would be workable, simply because it would be very difficult to have one agency having authority over other agencies. But I think that's the kind of discussions that we have to be having here right now, because this is a big issue. And once we can work our way through this, we can probably pull a lot of this together. I know that once it starts, it's not going to end.
Yeah, right.
I don't support the commission. I support the board. I've listened to watershed council after watershed council come through and say it ain't broke, don't fix it. If the system is working well, this looks a whole lot like my first reaction and my last reaction to the Willamette groups that was set up. Too top heavy. That it didn't need to be that big. I see us going further towards some group with some autonomy to do some things, and to me that's administration, and we don't need administration here. I think the plan is working well. We're infusing quite a bit more money into it, but I don't see that as a bad thing, and I don't think we need a commission to run it.
Okay, and that we're kind of at a threshold here where we've got and take it to the point where the concept of the plan is institutionalized and the concept of the Oregon plan can go forward regardless of who's sitting in the governor's seat and who's sitting in our chairs here in the legislature, and to make it be a standalone commission where there's a connection between the people that are on the ground actually doing the watershed restoration projects and figuring out how to increase water quality and how to increase salmon are represented on that board, and they are balanced off by people that are familiar with how the state agencies work. And I'm not interested in taking it to a place where there's any control over the state agencies. I don't think that's real appropriate at this point. But I think that to set something up that can go beyond the cast of characters that's involved right now is important for the future of the Oregon plan, and that we've got people that can make that happen.
Are we strictly in the discussion of the commission, or should I go to where I would like to be and let
pet fly around here. In the Dash 6 Amendment, on page 4, there's a structure that I believe would work.
Page 4, Griffin?
Page 4 on the Dash 6 Amendment. It's a commission made up with the Board of Agriculture in the place of Soil and Water Conservation District, and a six-member board to see its flexibility. I believe it would suffice, and if it's something that's where I believe it should be, if that's acceptable to the group, maybe we could. I'd like to throw that out there and make it in the form of a.
I'm not sure what you're recommending.
I'm recommending.
You're talking about the makeup of the board?
The makeup. I'm calling it a commission, and the makeup of the board. Isn't that what we're trying to accomplish here?
And would that be a standalone, or would that be in the Water Resources Department, or another agency?
I think it would be a standalone. That's what we're under now.
Oh, now we're under the Water Resources Department.
Let me look here.
But I appreciate where you're going with the makeup of the board, and I think that's our second discussion.
Right.
And our first discussion needs to be, where do we want to house, where do we want to put them?
Well, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting the cart in front of the horse. I apologize.
And I think that's going to come in. That's any proof?
Yeah, just a question of Representative Thompson. It appears to me that basically, what is this other than expansion of what currently exists?
That's what it is.
Okay.
And that's an effort to get us, this amendment is an effort to get us to something that we can move forward with. That in the interim, if we decide to expand, we can expand. But it does put the Board of Agriculture in place for Soil Water Conservation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. While you're on the Dash 6 Amendment, I want to point out, we're really talking about three things here. Because first of all, a board or commission, whatever the name of that entity is, that granting entity and its membership. Second of all, the functions of that group. And third, what is the designated single state agency by which that group will receive its grant money. We'll see. So as we walk through that, I can point you to the pieces that talk about, A, the membership and whatever name you choose for that group, B, again, the functions of that group, and C, then the single state agency through which it will receive funding.
The makeup of that board should make a difference as to how that it would be handled, in my perspective. That's why I say it.
Well, if you think that would help clarify, I don't have any problem with going to the makeup of the board first. But I have two other people here, first and Mr. Chairman, for Representative Cruz and Representative Uncle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure we do makeup first. I have some problem with the concept. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, because I think it is broke. You know, we adopted 2 years ago an Oregon plan, kind of, sort of. Nobody really understood it. We had some broad principles that we adopted, and really that's all that we came to consensus on, was some broad principles. We say we are a success because we spent a lot of money, and I don't think spending money is any definition of success. I think at some point in time we're going to need to prove that we have actually made a difference other than just spending money. And to this point, I'm not sure that we can do that. We're still doing a shotgun approach to all this stuff, all over the state, here and there, flavor of the month sort of approach to conservation. And we aren't going to have definable results. what we need is a solid structure in place that's going to give us some definition of the program. And that's why we need the commission. The one thing we didn't want to do was create another state agency. We certainly didn't want to do that. But the furthest away from any political whatever we could get to give an organization as much autonomy as possible while still having the oversight and control structure that needs to exist was commission status. We've got that already, and it works in various places throughout the state. And so that is why I think the first question is, are we just expanding what currently exists, or are we creating a structure that is different from what currently exists? And that is the commission. And how we make up that commission is certainly up to some speculation. But you know, this is not a top-down approach. This doesn't look anything like the Willamette River Initiative to me at all. Number one, this is being done in broad daylight, not the way that was done.
No, it's not.
fluorescent light then. Okay. But you know, I think this is a vital piece of anything that we create here is what kind of structure we put in place, what kind of certainty are the people of Oregon going to have in the fact that this structure has some permanency. And you know, so we can move ahead with the Oregon plan, however it continues to evolve with a level of certainty that it's still going to be there and it's not going to turn out to be something totally different 2 years from now. So you know, there was a lot of thought putting into what this should be, and in my opinion, Mr. Chair, the commission is the most sensible, most logical organ we can create here as the basis for however we evolve the rest of the Oregon plan.
Representative, I want you to clarify for me. You made the statement that we have other commissions around the state.
Well, come on.
Very well. Yeah. And my concern is that those other commissions operate under a department, under another agency, and so I'm not sure exactly where you were trying to go with that.
Well, okay, you can call them commissions, you can call them whatever. I mean, and admittedly, there's lots of different ways these things are structured out there, but there are some commissions that operate quite well and some boards that operate quite well as far as their structure and their command and control structure, I think, is the most important thing here. And how much, you know, obviously, this is the governor-appointed commission, or call it a board. I think the commission gives it some PR perspective that would be helpful. What authority that commission has over the program that it's actually running, I think is important. And when I was looking at commissions where most of them actually, the people that run the program are employees of the commission, and that's the direct command and control structure, I think that's important.
And let me go a little farther, Sonny. We do have commissions that are commodity commissions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think separate from that are commissions that are representing their policymakers for departments. And it seems to me that with the authority that this group has, that they would be more like the commissions that are involved with the department. And that's why I'm thinking that really, in this, they need to be tied either to another department or they need to be a standalone department.
Well, and I would see them standalone, Mr. Chair. And as far as the authority they have, is that something that needs to be determined in full discussion? You know, whether it's oversight, whether it's advisory, whatever it is, we need to discuss that. But until we know the type of structure we have, we can't really delineate authorities and responsibilities.
And Representative, I'm thinking of only authority to manage the fund.
Well, that's a start.
Representative Lundquist?
No, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And this might be a question to you and your co-chair. Is a basic issue before us of whether we're going to have the executive branch have the control or whether we're going to have the legislature? It seems to me like that might be the basic question you need to answer.
I'll speak for myself, and the co-chair can step in. To me, it is executive branch. All departments in the state of Oregon operate under the executive branch.
Yeah. Regardless of whether we have a commission or a board, is what they're saying. Okay, so, and we all agree to that. And, I mean, that's the basic premise. Okay.
Representative Jensen and then King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that I've got a strong position on commission versus board. I do have a question about if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of thing. One of the things that's not being discussed, it seems to me, is to just maintain the existing system with the existing staff. Just because we put more money in does not necessarily mean that we have to create a larger bureaucracy to deal with that. So, I'm not sure, you know, I'm sure I don't have the wisdom to know which is ultimately going to be the best. And if I had that, I would be happy to tell you.
Representative King.
Thank you. I've got a real concern that to work out a sensible plan to be able to do what I think the whole mission of a board or commission would do, well, that's the process that I'd like to go down. But I think that to get the pieces put together, it takes longer than getting to early next week to resolve the issue of this bill. And, short of putting together a good product or, dealing without, some deal of consensus, I think that this is a part of the overall program that the government would have major concern on that if we are going to be resolving the issues of this bill early next week, that this may be, something that we don't tackle because it is going to be a very substantial issue. And I'm not sure that we can put the time into it to do the job. Whereas I think if we were taking a month to do this, I think we could do the job.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I will point out to you that as far as the appointment of whatever this body is, in the amendments and all of the amendments, we do have reference to language that says that the appointment will be by the governor subject to Senate confirmation. So that is currently in the amendments anyway.
You're saying dash 6?
Dash 6, but it is also identical in the other amendments. Number 2, the dash 5, the dash 10, that is how this body is envisioned, unless you change it, however, but that is how this body is envisioned being appointed as far as given their charge and jurisdiction.
Senator Barriola.
Thank you, Chairman. This is perhaps one of the most interesting parts and pieces of discussion because I think it symbolizes more than it creates substantively. So let me share why I think that. First of all, I've got about 4 observations, very brief ones. I share Representative Moore's desire to see that we institutionalize the process. I don't want to see that we institutionalize the committee. This is so hasty that I don't think it needs to be that difficult. We do need to create a mechanism that lasts to 2015. Leading the agency, particularly stepchild in state agency, I don't think accomplishes that goal. Basically, I think it has to move beyond the seated legislators in this room, in this committee building, and the governor. And we freely acknowledge that leadership in the building will change party in so on as the commitment to this restoration of watersheds and fisheries. We heard yesterday morning testimony from Roy Hemingway that we not be so specific in designating the members as they're hard to find and they're hard to fill by prescription. You don't just get a pick that happens. Take your entities. But we have to a certain extent admit to the concern of 3 different groups. Process. And one of those groups certainly is our shared council coordinators that don't want to see someone, and it doesn't matter whether it's a federal agency or a state agency or a Board of Commissioners by this organization or proponents of a measure comes forward and lay over their vision of what ought to happen on the ground. Part of the Oregon plan is what people living on the landscape know needs to be done and how it needs to be done voluntarily from you. There'll be more that way than they would if we could get it prescriptive. But we can't also ignore the concerns of the proponents of Measure 66 that had a real clear ideal of what would happen under a Measure 66 facilitated Oregon plan, and that was more resources and better coordination. We can't also ignore the concerns of landowners, and their real concerns. And their real concerns are very clear. State agencies are not always the best friends of them. That's through hours of testimony. They even listen to some of the finest idiocy on earth. Not intentional harm brought by state agencies, just lack of coordination. That seems to be written in good faith and administered for a proper purpose that absolutely conflicts. We look at the agricultural community, the fishing community, or the ranching community, or the, anyone we want to. We can see disincentives and lack of clarity. And so I think there's a real fear that we have to acknowledge and we have to do something about on the landowner base. And those basically said, look, don't let this thing be put from the ground to the committee level or the commission level and empower the folks whose stake is the greatest in this issue to make decisions. Now we can take the GREB board and add a few members. That would be the minimum that we would need to do under this process to move forward. I don't think that fairly and honestly acknowledges the concerns of the landowner community. It may serve the interests of watershed counselors, but that's not the purpose of Measure. And that's not the purpose of the Oregon Law. We're not here to make life easier for a lot of people. They're comfortable with the entity that they have built, and the people that work with them are nice people, and they're earnestly trying. And, you know, everybody's worked with a good agency person in an agency that had heartburn with. And you form loyalties, and I understand all that. That's not a bad thing. But that doesn't institutionalize a program that solves problems for a lot of people over landscape. The commission, in my opinion, offers a more flexible, better net across the landscape to pull the concerns and the interests of people together. It doesn't even necessarily mean spaces are going to But I think forming a commission is essentially sends a message that GREB and the approach that we took to begin with was the right approach at the right time. Because it took a great idea, a genius idea, and it grew it. Now we're asking this thing to make a quantum leap forward and become an institution. And it's got to survive all of us. So I guess I'm suggesting that the watershed councils have to get outside their comfort zones. The legislature has to go not to the place where it would be happy to be in that control of everything and get a little outside its comfort zone. The governor and the executive branch has to get a little outside its comfort zone. And what we create, I think, for the commission offers a little better opportunity for everybody to see this before. We're not here to build a good life for watershed counselors and coordinators to solve the funding problems of well of our conservation. There are real problems and we need to help, but that's not the primary purpose. Water quality, fish restoration, certainty, something beyond the partisanship and something beyond the vision of any individual that happens to occupy the government. Certainly beyond the vision of those people that happen to occupy the leadership. I think the commission structure offers the opportunity to do that a little bit better than the GWEB Plus, which is what we kind of have in the halfway point, or the GWEB function today. I'll remind the committee of some new faces, but some incredibly wrinkled old faces,
That,
But you think it's bad now, just wait.
That we did have some disconnects with the GWEB process to the extent that for 4 months no funding went forward from this committee to the GWEB board. There are limitations because of disconnects on the GWEB board with this committee. So, I mean, even a perfect structure like GWEB and a perfect committee like the Oversight Committee can get disconnected. Have to have an entity. Beyond that, and I think the commission didn't stand to do that a little bit better. And other folks are going to see it different. That's how I see it.
Thank you. Representative Thompson?
Lecture. But I don't see any reason we can't get the GWEB formula it is, or GWEB Plus, to get us through to get 66 implemented. And then go to where you're taking it in the interim, where we have a lot of time, because this is a major step in how we implement this and the forming of this commission. I don't think we have to do that under 66. And that's why I would support the other version, which is the GWEB Plus one. I think that we may get to where you're talking about. And I may be one of the ones that first supports you when we get there. But I'm worried that we're going to make a leap here that we don't have to make at this point in time.
I don't think anyone is suggesting that we have to go to the commission at this level. I think some of us are looking at it as maybe an opportunity that needs to be explored as far as we can. I also want to make it clear that I don't think anyone is suggesting that come July 1 that we have to have a new system in place. I think we all recognize that if we go this route, we've got to have a transition period to phase in. And we would have to develop the language to do that.
I have a question. Apparently, the commission would not look like the one in the dash five from what I'm hearing. So if somebody could explain to me just what it would look like, it would be helpful. The makeup of whatever we call this entity in the dash five, I mean, the actual who, what designee sits where and what kind of person sits here, is actually, except for specific, you know, watershed council members and that kind of specificity, other than that, it's not that different between the dash fives and the dash sixes. Same numbers, same commissions, same number of other folks, public members, whatever. And in terms of institutionalizing the Oregon plan, Representative Lundquist asked a good question, and if the answer is that no matter which one you do, they're going to be under the executive branch, yeah, they institutionalize anything. They serve four-year terms. Governors serve four-year terms. Whole bunches of them are going to come up during that governor's term of office and be extended or replaced at the will of that governor. And, yeah, they may come up for executive appointments, but, you know, unless you want to stop the whole process right there, I don't see with either one in terms of institutionalizing the Oregon plan. There are no plans in statute. You're not going anywhere unless the legislature or some future legislature decides that they want to significantly change it. And then you better sit down with the feds before you do that, because we all know what happens if we go too far afield of where we are. So, I mean, I guess I need to understand better what this commission is, because I thought I did, but I don't anymore.
Let me respond, Senator Dukes. First of all, I don't believe the Oregon Plan is in statute. What we passed last session was the funding for the Oregon Plan. So the Oregon Plan, as it now stands, is an executive plan. Now, secondly, where we are right now with the Dash 5s is that if you take the Dash 5s under this section and pull out the oversight of other agencies, take all that language out of it. Also take out the language of the regions. That's about where we are, which is very close to the
senators. There's a fundamental difference, Mr. Chair, between the two, and that is by making it a commission and by making the executive
of whatever you're calling it, an employee of the commission, even though the governor is appointing the commission. We have an entity that whose employees are answerable to it, not to the governor, even though it is executive branch. There's still a difference there, and by making it a commission, it makes it something that has more certainty than just GWEB, which is just part of the governor's natural resource office. So there is a level of certainty, and there is a level of separation there that I think is significant.
Mr. Chair?
There it is.
The current head of GWEB doesn't work for the governor. He works for the Water Resources Department.
Actually, he works for the Department of Agriculture.
Okay, wrong agency.
And therein lies the problem.
So this you've really done nothing different.
No. The head of the... Ken runs program. Louise is chair of the commission. She works for the governor.
I would like to ask Ken Rothwell and Roy Hemingway, would you both come forward? And Ken Bailey, you just welcome up and sit down too. Change chairs if you'd like. I'd like Ken Rothwell to first, you sent us a note here that I don't totally understand. Could you explain?
So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify for the committee that the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board now is as close to being a separate agency as you can have and not be one. It has its own agency number. It's located administratively within the Water Resources Department. However, it only receives personnel and fiscal services from that department. The Water Resources Department does not have any oversight over the GWEB decision-making or the grants that it allocates or approves. It's basically an entity. It's just located there for fiscal reasons, and it could be separated right now and just taken out of the Water Resources Department and contract for those types of services with the Department of Administrative Services, with the Water Resources Department, or it could have staff to do that on its own. So it's basically a separate agency in those respects as it stands now.
Let me, before I ask the two of you to comment, my co-chair just pointed out that one of the distinctions between the commission and the board would be that, and I'll just read it for you, the Oregon Watershed Conservation Commission is created. The commission shall consist of 11 members appointed by the governor and approved by the Senate. Although it doesn't say that here, I think it goes farther on down. The governor and the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House of Representatives shall jointly designate one member of the commission as chairperson. And the way it is now, the governor appoints a non-voting chairman of the GWEB board.
Mr. Chair, Roy Hemingway. The way it works now is that the Paula Burgess is the non-voting chair or her designee under law. So the dash two amendments would continue, or the dash six amendments would continue it in that way. The governor's natural resource assistant or that person's designee as a non-voting chair.
You mentioned, Mr. Hemingway, yesterday, I believe, the governor's point of view on whether it was a commission or a board. And at that time, you said the governor had no qualms with it being a commission so long as they did not deal with oversight of other agencies. Is that, do you have more to add to that?
Mr. Chairman, I think there is some confusion about these words. We're beginning to speak in a shorthand commission versus board. We have no objections to something that is akin to an independent state agency with these additional appointments to what is now GWEB. We want to make sure that the coordination function continues. And that's why we have favored continuing, and we feel very strongly about this, with a non-voting co-chair or non-voting chair appointed by the governor and the director appointed by the governor. If it's an independent commission with neither of those, we think that the coordination with the rest of the Oregon plan will be very difficult, will not necessarily happen.
Let's say Lundquist.
Our comment, I guess. Earlier the co-chair spoke about landowners working with the agencies and the others aren't so cooperative and so forth. Maybe I'm missing something here, but speaking of the guys, which way to go, they're still going to be working with the state agencies, are they not, out on the land? And it's primarily, if that's true, then I'm thinking about how do we have that management structure? How do we have that impact to the agencies? It's more of a question than an answer, but I guess that's what, in the end, where I would like to go. So where somehow we continue the relationship between the agency and the landowners and all that, but perhaps if this board commission, call it what you want to, would have more of a direct, I guess, impact. And maybe that's not possible because they do work for the governor, but I guess that's utopia for me. I'm not sure how to get there.
Senator Ferrillo would like to respond.
I think someone wants to put your finger on the issue, and I guess what I'm hoping that we can get to is a place where the watershed council coordinators designated as members, saltwater conservation district members, the public members at large, and the state agencies that are administering the programs where landowners interface are sitting at the same table, working on how to implement and how to oversee and how to put dollars on the ground for the Oregon plan. That's the mechanism, this coordinating body, whether we call it whatever or whatever, that's the place where you'll get the best operations of cooperation. You'll see, I think, changes in attitude both at the landowner base and at the administration base of state agencies. And state agencies are never going to be operate outside the law. But I think there's lots of different ways to accomplish objectives that are stated in the law. The problem we got now is that I think that there's a real fear that this could easily flip over into a regulatory nightmare for landowners and a place where agency heads and landowners interface to build policy is a place where you get the best interface and the lowest threshold of pain. And so I think that's where it seems to be offer the most promise. That may be a vision of your utopia, but I think it's achievable.
Representative Thompson?
I appreciate the comments about the landowners, and it's absolutely true, but I just by listening to the whole conversation here, I'm hearing a lot for the landowners, and yet there's a lot more people out here than just landowners that are involved in this, and everybody's worried about the landowner, which is good, but you got all the cities, all the other people that aren't landowners here. They want that same kind of input. And when we go around and structure this, and I hear only one part of the conversation. And so I agree we need to get there, but we also need some input for the other entities that are involved in this, too.
Mr. Chairman, can I just I'll respond to that. I guess maybe I used the term too in a narrow focus. I guess really a better term would be the plan participants, Oregon plan participants, certainly that includes the municipalities and all the other ones, and I'd probably use them there, but that's really what I was thinking about.
Appreciate that.
Representative Cruz first.
Yeah, right, do you guys have a problem with a member of the Senate, member of the House being non-voting members on this board?
Representative Cruz, if
legislators are willing to do the review of the work of these grant requests, I don't think we would have any problem with it.
Yeah.
There is a quite a bit of paper to read in this process. So. And you know, any way that we can, as we said before, any way that we can increase the legislators' input into our efforts within the Constitution, we want to do it.
Okay. And a follow-up, Mr. Chair. I guess I also don't understand how if the governor doesn't appoint the chair of this commission and the director of the commission, suddenly he doesn't have the ability to coordinate state agencies. I mean, I that doesn't make any sense to me.
Representative Cruz, if I may, a little bit of how Oregon government is differed from other state governments is that we have a very strong independent state agencies that work underneath commissions in a lot of cases. And we have many agency directors who don't report to the governor or through the executive change of command at all. They report to a commission. And some of those commission members can only be, in some agencies, can only be removed for cause. The result is that when you, in particular, and landowners and others ask us to coordinate among state agencies, it can be very difficult because we have an agency director sitting, we have, in our particular, in our natural resource cabinet, we have probably the majority of the agency directors don't report to the governor at all.
Okay.
And they would be quite within their rights, so most of them don't, to say, we're not interested.
But how does the governor's natural resource director, being the non-voting chair of whatever this is, suddenly make that person better able to coordinate state agencies?
Representative Cruz, I don't think it necessarily makes anything happen, but it does allow for the coordination function to have a more direct role in the grant function as well. It allows us to have one more option to be able to get a point of view across in the grant function. One of the things that we heard from the legislature during the interim and early in the session was that they felt that it was not enough coordination going on in this program. Now, I came to be in charge of this program in July largely because the governor heard that complaint and wanted somebody to be in charge, wanted somebody who could bring the state agencies together, make them work together, and make them speak with one voice. Creating an independent, totally independent grant function, grant-making function within state government means there's one entity out here that's much more difficult to coordinate than otherwise. We think that having the governor have some indirect control through appointment of the non-voting chair and through appointment of the director will assist in that coordination function.
We may have a difference in philosophy here.
It's possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative King has a question.
One more comment.
I keep going back to how much we have to chew, and I keep hearing that we want to get things wrapped up, you know, this week, and then we're having people burn midnight oil, and then we might even get to join us. It's deserving. But if I have to pick someone to lead the Oregon plan within the next two or three meetings of thought, within a week, my choice is the governor, because it, the person's proven, the vision's there, and there's the firepower of the office to do that. At the same time, though, you've heard me say in the Natural Resources Subcommittee that we can't track the money. And I don't think there's any argument that we have people working for different departments, and that looks like a Band-Aid approach. So I do think there is, need to do some task forcing to come up with the right kind of structure, whatever that is. So I think that the chair's going to that point. But I don't think that I can see anything that happens within the time frame of getting out of the building
in a big hurry.
Well, I guess to respond to that, I would suggest that if you look back at the last election and reverse the numbers, did you have the same feeling that the governor or the chief executive, whoever that is always going to be the right person? And I guess I would suggest to you that we can't know that. You know, the point is that actually ought to focus on the other issue. There are some commissions and boards in the state of Oregon where the governor appoints. Some of them don't work wonderfully well. There are some commissions in force where the chairman or the person in charge of that committee works for the commission. Some of those just work wonderfully well, and some of them don't work out of time. So there's either structure out there. Point is, I believe that this organization moves forward and it does actually have legs and it brings people instead of pushes people away. It's going to be seen by observers, landowners, stakeholders, municipalities, and if I was too narrow in my other comment, tribal representatives, other stakeholders, environmental community members, as something not politically controlled. Then maybe you don't want to put a political entity in charge. Maybe it isn't the legislature, maybe it isn't the executive. It would have to exist in the executive branch because that's its function. But who gets, who has the appointment authority? And in the case of this committee, there's a lot of cross responsibilities. For instance, the chair would have to be appointed by the three entities, so the half, the Senate, and the governor. And you have a better opportunity, I think, to depoliticize these issues and to build trust. And it is about fish. It is about fish and water. It's not about who's got the hammer, or who has the credibility, or who has the charisma, or who has the votes in this cycle.
And I don't argue with any of that. I think my argument is that if we're going to be broad scope, I think we're going to need more time. You know, if we don't have the time, I just think we have to narrow the scope. That's all I'm trying to say.
I understand that, but I guess I don't see the variables changing. If we study the century, there's only so many variables you can pick. They're on the table.
You know, I didn't even know I said I had raised my hand to talk, but I've been thinking about it for about an hour. Yeah.
Well, then,
I thought maybe I was going to be off the hook for a minute.
You're part of my own business.
For a change, yeah. You know. I really have been sitting here feeling like, you know, some law student that was suckered into enrolling for class 3 weeks before finals or something like that. I'm new to this committee and I've been playing massive catch up, I guess, and not doing all that well. But what I sense from all this is that we have everything for kind of a transcendent view that wants to make sure that this whole thing's in place 15 years from now when some of us are pushing 70 and might be a few lucky ones around here that aren't pushing 50. But certainly none of us will be in the legislative process at that point. It reaches from there all the way across to people that are, I think, really just concerned about, you know, the politics of the moment, who's in power and who's got the votes and who's going to jockey for what position. Somebody earlier tonight said to me, and I think they've gone by now, among the wise ones that have left, said that the thing that unites us all is that we really care about, you know, species recovery and streams enhancement and all that. And so, you know, while I'm trying to catch up, I just want some guarantees that what we are doing really will be transcendent rather than partisan or narrow gauge or whatever. I hear all the arguments on all sides, and I just come away saying, man, I need to go study more, you know? So do what you're going to do, but let's really try to convince one another that we're trying to reach far beyond this room and far beyond this decade, too, I think.
Not sure where we're at. I think that's exactly right.
as I stated earlier, the co-chair and I are going to sit down with the governor and the governor's staff tomorrow, and hopefully that'll give us some better direction of where our options are. Mr. Burley, I asked you to come up. Did you have any comments you'd like to make?
No, thank you very much.
Fair enough. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? I think we're kind of running out of steam here tonight, and maybe we need to take a break.
It was gone a long time ago.
Captain Lankwood?
Shot down.
Yeah.
We're quite out of here.
Do the co-chairs or have you really done almost a flow chart or a chain of command or whatever you want to talk about? I mean, I guess that's where I'm having trouble right at the moment, because I'm not sure who's wanting to, regardless we call it commission or board, what is their role going to be and what is their line of authority? And are they going to have employees and all that sort of thing? Maybe you've already done that. I just haven't quite figured that out yet.
We haven't developed it, but we have had a schematic presented to us some time back. I think it's someplace in my files. Staff says she'll take care of that. She'll have one for you. 8 o'clock in the morning. At some time, anyway. Is there any other burning comments there? What's any, Morgan?
Which morning you're talking.
If not, I think we'll adjourn this meeting, and I really appreciate all the patience and the hard work. Thank you.